Good morning. If you'd like to turn over in your Bibles to Luke chapter 7. Luke chapter 7. It's good to have several of the travelers back with us today. We had a smaller crowd last week with everybody gone for the wedding and other things going on, but it's good to all be back together again. Father's Day weekend last year, I sat out in the foyer. There were some tables put up to have a meal out there, and I sat with a bunch of folks I was meeting for the first time. I had Skyped with a couple of them along the way, but for a lot of it was new faces for me, and sat down to a meal. And it's an interesting thing when you're going somewhere to, I don't know what your experiences are in your line of work for interviewing for a job. Ministry is a little different. In that there seems to be this weekend filled with activity. I actually heard a guy last week talking about going to interview for a ministry job where it was a full week of every day there were things planned and stuff around town and members to eat with and all that kind of stuff. But you sit down to a meal like that, and it was good food, and I enjoyed that side of it. But at the same time, I realize as I'm sitting here, this is not just dinner conversation that's going on. And my wife will tell you right off the bat that dinner conversation is not something I'm good at. When the plate of food is there before me, I have a task at hand. And that task is the plate of food. And sometimes I will forget there's other people there that I need to interact with. And so I sat there, and each question that would come up, I would think to myself as I'm trying to eat and talk and everything at the same time, okay, what's the answer that needs to be said to this? What experience in life can I draw from here that I can talk about? What do I say? What do I do? And you feel kind of on display. I wonder, when I read stories like the one we're going to look at here in Luke 7 today, how much of that Jesus would feel as he would encounter people at meals. Because it never seemed to be about the meal. It always seemed to be about who was there, what was happening, the questions that would be asked. And it would be difficult for him, I think, in a lot of occasions, to just relax and eat the meal. And we find him in a case like that today, where he is, it says in verse 36 as we begin, that one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. Now, if we know anything about the Pharisees at this point, we initially have something here that's kind of unusual. And the good thing about that dinner out in the foyer back in June was, I felt like I was with a group of people that wanted to have dinner with me. I felt like there was a group of people there that wanted to get to know us better and that we wanted to get to know better. But imagine for a minute you're on the opposite side of that spectrum, where you have been invited to dinner by someone who is a part of a group who has been your adversary to this point, and what that meal is like. Think of people you just disagree with a lot and what it would be like to sit down and have a meal with those folks. So it says, one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. He went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. A woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, so she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. And as we look at this story, a question develops in my mind, which is, who is really out of place here? Now, I know we look at it from the standpoint of if there were really a meal going on and this were happening, who we might think is out of place. But really, if you think about, and maybe societally, that's how we would think of it. Here you've got a Pharisee, he's invited someone important to a meal, and there's somebody who's out of place. When I was in college, I went to my aunt and uncle's house. My uncle was a neurosurgeon, my aunt was a neurologist. They had much more money than I could ever dream of. They hung with a crowd that was very unlike the crowd that I hang with. And while I was there at the holidays, they were invited to a Christmas party. And it was them, and I was the only other adult in the house, and they said, you should go with us. And I said, all right, I love mingling at parties, that's me. But sure, I'll go. And I was curious, because this is not my crowd. I, until the age of 5, lived in a trailer in New Jersey. And by the way, I've been amazed as Ron took us to his mom's house not too long ago, and she is in a trailer park up in around Salem, if I remember right. And I remember going through that trailer park thinking to myself, I have never seen a trailer park like this before. This is I would live here. This is nice. And when I went to visit the trailer park in New Jersey as an adult later on, it was frightening. It was not the kind of place you would dream of living. It was very kind of scary to drive around it. In Arkansas, trailer parks are not like trailer parks are here in Oregon. And so I did not come from money. I was in this trailer. Then we moved to Alabama, and I lived with my grandparents who were not money people. They were not people who had a lot of education. They were not people who had a lot of experience in society. When we moved into the house, my grandfather had moved in about 3 months ahead of us. He was a gunsmith. We moved in, walked into the kitchen, and he had clamped to the kitchen counter a thing for loading shells. My grandmother walked in absolutely mortified, looking at the, what are you doing? The kitchen counter was cracked from the amount of pressure he was putting in, loading the shells. And I thought, this is my life. And so when I'm invited to this society party with doctors and surgeons, I'm the guy who's out of place. And I walk in, and first of all, everybody's there is drinking, and I'm not a drinker, and I don't know what to do with that. The things they're talking about, the cars they're talking about, the planes they're talking, all that stuff, I don't know about those things. And I feel very, very out of place. Now, if you were to ask my aunt and uncle, who brought me there with them, they don't feel like I'm out of place. I'm family. If you look at this story from the outside, and you're thinking of the Pharisee invites Jesus to dinner, and Jesus is there, and he is the guest, you might think this woman is out of place. But think through the eyes of Jesus for a minute. Who do you find Jesus with when he encounters people by choice? And he is not with society. When he encounters people by choice. He's not with the highfalutin people. He's not with the wealthy. He is with the poor. He is with the ones everybody else describes as sinners. And so as you look at this story initially and you start to think, well, this woman seems really out of place here, I would challenge that thought in you a little bit, which is maybe she's not the one who is out of place. Maybe it's actually the host here who seems a little out of place in the story, because that's not who Jesus is normally around, which causes us, I hope, to look in the mirror a little bit and wonder who's out of place when it comes to who we're with. Are we spending time with the people that Jesus would spend time with? Or are we caught up in all the other societal norms that we might look at? So it says, when the Pharisee who invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. Jesus answered him, Simon, I have something to tell you. Tell me, teacher, he said. If he were a prophet, he would know what kind of woman she is. And is this not what we do to people? And very honestly, is this not what some of us have had done to us? Along the way, people categorize us based on something. Could be some sort of physical attribute, could be where you're at societally, could be where you're at money-wise, could be something about your family. And it's frustrating sometimes, isn't it? I took some grad classes at Harding when I was back in Arkansas, and when I would go into the Bible building, there was an older secretary on the third floor who always mixed me up with the overweight Bible professor. And I would always look at the overweight Bible professor and think, I'm really not that big, am I? I don't. And it would frustrate me when I would go in there and I would think to myself, she doesn't know who I am. And she would call me by his name all the time. I thought I could get grades or a paycheck or something. People lump us into these categories. They look at this woman and she is a sinner in their eyes, which is crazy because are we not all sinners? Could you imagine someone coming into our group this morning and sitting down and saying, I don't know what to do because these people are all sinners. Well, of course we are. Now, we're trying to do better, but this woman is a sinner just like they are. And if he knew what kind of woman she was, and the funny thing about this whole thing is he does know what kind of woman she is. He also knows what kind of man this Pharisee is that's going to lead to this whole story he's about to tell. He knows what kind of woman she is, and that's the very reason why he wants her there. Because if she's not there, everything that's about to happen can't happen. It's difficult sometimes to deal with people who are different than we are. It's difficult to deal with people with different values, It's difficult to deal with people that are from different points in life, from different cultures, from different religious backgrounds. What do we do with people? And too many times we can find ourselves building these walls between us instead of seeing this person as one of God's creation also. So he tells this story. Two people owed money to a certain money lender. One owed him 500 denarii, the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he forgave the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more? And if you could imagine for a minute, there are a couple of us that have a big debt issue. One of our debts is much smaller, the other much larger. And if they both came in and forgave them, if someone came to you, whatever your debt may be, someone walked in here today, billionaire, and said, all right, there's only 100 and whatever of us here this morning. I'm a billionaire, and so this would be a drop in the bucket. Run back home, take a half hour, run back home, and bring all your bills back with you, and I will take care of it. It'd be a pretty cool day, wouldn't it? There would be some of us who would think to ourselves, this is a life-changing moment. There would be some of us who have just been on a Dave Ramsey kick for a while and have paid everything off that think, timing, again. And there would be others of you who have planned well along the way that tomorrow is just like today was, just another day. You move along. And the level of excitement, enthusiasm, appreciation you have for that moment, it has an awful lot to do with your need. And so Jesus says here, there's one with a great debt, one with a little debt. Who is going to be more appreciative here? And Simon says, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven. You have judged correctly, Jesus said. Which brings us to the question, can we see our own need? And I don't know about you, but I see it sometimes. And other times, I don't feel like I'm in need at all. I'm pretty blessed when it comes down to it. I have a home to live in. I have a car to drive. I have a nice office with lots of books. I have a great family, good church. And sometimes I don't look around and see my need. Now, there have been times in life where my need would slap me in the face every morning as I woke up. And some of you are probably there this morning. This woman understands need in a way the Pharisee does not. Now, the funny thing here is, as this story continues to unfold, one of them is really going to be in more need than the other, and it's not the one that you would think. Because even though her life is a mess, everything's about to change. Then he turned toward the woman and said to Simon, one of my favorite questions in all of the Bible, do you see this woman? Now, if you could imagine for a minute, if instead of me moving a little bit back and forth, if I had been stationary up here for the last 8 minutes or whatever it's been, and there were a woman up here you had never seen before, but you thought you might have seen her on one of the exits of the interstate holding a sign, or you thought you might have seen her in the bad part of town walking towards cars as they would come to the intersection, trying to make a proposition. And that woman walked in the back door here as we were going this morning and walked up on stage and started to wash my feet. Nothing I say would be getting through to you at that point. She could leave, and I could leave, and someone could come to you and say, what color shirt was Brian wearing? And you would have no idea. Because you would be focused in on nothing other than that woman. One of the first times I saw PowerPoint used in a sermon, the guy was talking about how we're busy and we're juggling our schedules and all that. And on his PowerPoint slide, in the bottom right corner of the slide, there was a clown juggling. Now, the only reason I can tell you that the sermon was about juggling was because the clown was juggling. I have no idea anything that was said during that sermon, because all I could watch was this mesmerizing clown juggling in the corner of the PowerPoint. Everyone in this house has been focused in on this woman. So when Jesus says, do you see this woman? We have a couple options here. Either one, this is a really bad question, and I don't usually put that on Jesus. I don't think that's the thing here. Or two, he's trying to draw our attention to something and trying to draw their attention to something. Now, I had trouble with this video this morning, so we'll see what happens. We might have to go do it a different way if it doesn't come up. But to introduce it, just in case the sound is not what it needs to be, it's about a minute long. There is a basketball team in this video. If they're wearing white shirts, if I remember right. And what the announcer is going to ask of us is to try to keep track of how many times this team passes the ball during the course of, I think it's 30 seconds or something like that. So as you watch the video, the team in white, you're going to try to figure out how many times they have passed the ball. We'll see if this works.
This is an awareness test. How many passes does the team in white make?
Go!
The answer is 13. But did you see the moonwalking bear?
Go!
All right. Now, the first time I got to the midway point of that, this is, by the way, in England, a commercial for watching for bicyclists. The first time I got to the midpoint of that, I was expecting some tiny little bear somewhere. Did anybody see it the first time, by the way? Okay, a few of you. And then when I rewound, or when I watched and saw the full-size guy in a bear suit going across the screen, and if you missed it, it's on YouTube, you can look for it later. I thought, how did I miss that? And then I was not convinced. And so I had to replay the video from the beginning to see if he was actually there during the first part. He was. He's really in there. And the lesson taught here is you see what you're looking for. And so when they look at this woman, they see what they expect. They see that this woman is a sinner, this woman is this kind of woman, and they can't see good in her. Jesus says, I came into your house, you did not give me any water for my feet. This means nothing to us, but in this culture, I don't know what the equivalent of this would be, whether it would be you take someone's coat and go put it on the guest room bed, you have whatever sort of hospitality as someone comes in the door. In this culture, because they're walking around in sandals all the time, you would have a basin so they could wash their feet when they came to your house. You did not give me water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss. And again, this is not something we normally do as we come into someone's home, but the way their culture operated, there was a kiss from the host to the guest. Male, female, didn't matter. This is what they did. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, another thing that they would do as a host, but she poured perfume on my feet. Now, there are a couple things we can get from this. One, maybe Jesus was not all that welcome a guest to begin with. And he was invited, but it sure doesn't seem like he was honored once he got there. And so maybe the whole intent of this was to trap. Maybe the whole intent of this was to do what the Pharisees would normally do. Jesus notices this the whole time going along and then realizes that they're so focused in on this woman and who she is and who she's not that they don't realize what they're doing. They don't realize where they've fallen short here, which brings the question, are we blind to our own shortcomings? Do we look around at other people and we see the things they're doing and sometimes we think to ourselves, well, at least I'm not that bad. We would never say it out loud, I hope, but do we think that sometimes? Do we assume because someone is in a different point in life that they don't have it together as well as we do because we're here? And I don't know about you again, but I do that too often. I think it was Cecilia that shared a video on Facebook this week, if it's not you, I'm sorry, about homeless people. And there were people that would go and ask for food, and the homeless people would share the food that they had, or they would sit down and they took time for just these guys walking along and would share food. And I thought to myself, I don't know how often I would do that. And yet these folks are doing that. And sometimes we would look at them and think, well, they've made bad decisions in life and they've brought themselves here and I'm better than they are for whatever reason. And in reality, we see that people are people. There are really good people that have made really bad decisions and there are really bad people that have gotten awful lucky in life. And there's really not that much removing this Pharisee from this woman when it comes to life, and yet they see themselves as so very different. Do we look into our own lives and see our own shortcomings? Do we see that we also are flawed people? Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven as her great love has shown, but whoever has been forgiven little shows little. Then Jesus said to her, your sins are forgiven. And I don't know what she was looking for when she came there. She knew who Jesus was. She knew that there was something unique about him. She took the opportunity when she heard he was there at this house to go and do what she did. I don't know if forgiveness of sins is what she was looking for that day, if it was just to meet him and maybe be changed somehow. But everything about her life has now changed. Whoever has been given little shows little appreciation. We've been given much. Now, you may not feel like it some mornings when you look around and your surroundings are not what you wish they were, when you look around and life is not going as you would like to be going, but we have been given more than most people can imagine because God sends his son here for us because he loves us that much. The other guests, this is kind of the first look at them we've had, but the other guests began to say among themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. They continue seeing what they want to see. I think Jesus was there from the beginning so that they could find something. And that's a tough position to be in. And I worry sometimes if I'm on the other side of that. I worry sometimes, am I waiting for people to do what they're going to do? Am I waiting for people to show me, yes, you fit into the category that I put you in. That's where you go. Or am I looking for people to be who God wants them to be? Do I value people in the way that God values people? So what are you looking for? What are you looking for this morning? Because if it's money, then that's the thing that will drive you. If it is acceptance, that is the thing that will drive you. But if it's God, and if it's to be the kind of child of God that he would like you to be, then you can start to see that a little bit more. Now that you've seen the video with the bear going across the screen, the next time that rolls around, if you ever see it again, you'll know. And you'll see it immediately. It's funny to me, every time I've seen that video, I will look at it and think, how did I not see that the first time? So clear, so there. I wasn't looking for it. And this morning, we need to refocus our eyes. When we were talking about the gift of church membership and the gift of salvation a couple weeks ago, we mentioned fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. What are your eyes fixed on this morning? Are you looking to him or are you looking somewhere else for the answers in your own life? I hope you will look to him. This morning, if you have not taken him on in baptism, if you are not a part of the family, we would love to make that happen this morning. We would love to see you be a part of this family. We would love to show you that we have moments where we're this woman and things make sense, and we have moments where we're the Pharisee and we pick at people, but we're trying to be better. If you're a part of the family and you think to yourself, I need to refocus my eyes, I need to see things the way that God sees them, I need to understand people as part of God's creation and not in the categories I might put them in, then we'd like to pray about that. If there's something you need to confess, if there's something we can pray about, or if you'd like to become a part of this family, please come as we stand and sing.